This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
Okay, Jed, what's coming?
Double homicide, one male, one female. Killer's male, white, 40s.
Set up a perimeter and tell them we're en route.
I'm placing you under arrest for the future murder of Sarah Marks.
Give the man his hat.
The future can be seen.
There hasn't been a murder in 6 years. There's nothing wrong with the system. It is
perfect. I agree.
Murder can be stopped. The system can't be wrong.
Run! Wait!
You say something, Chief?
No.
You're in a lot of trouble, John. I have a warrant in my pocket that says murder.
Minority Report.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. And today for Throwback Tuesday, we've actually got a... It's funny that we're calling it throwback because for this week, we're actually going to be focused on the future, on movies, on shows that primarily look at that. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about Brave New World. And today, we are taking it back to 2002 and Steven Spielberg's Minority Report.
Or 2054.
Correct. Depending.
Oh, I'm so glad that we decided to revisit this because I loved Minority Report when it came out. I've loved it every time I've watched it, but I've gone far too long without rewatching it. And really, it's one of those films that hold up so, so well. Like, you know, more than a decade after it came out, you watch it now and so many things about it, even from the way it looks, the stunts, the story, the sci-fi world, it feels really fresh. Like if this came out today, I would still think it was an excellent film.
It holds up well. It's also one of those movies that's always on TV in some form. Like every year since it came out, it's on TV in some form, either on like Fox Movies or like Fox Action Movies or AXN, Cinemax. And now it's on streaming, like specifically HBO Go. And I think it was on Netflix like a couple of months ago. So it's one of those sci-fi staple sci-fi movies that just never gets old. And it's a lot of fun.
So I've never seen Minority Report. This was my first go.
Oh, this was your first watch.
Nice. Yes. So I missed it when it first came out. And then after that, and I think that this is a double-edged sword always, because of the memes, I felt like I had seen it and then I didn't watch it because this was the first time really. And I just want to say that if you know Minority Report best for the hands in the air stuff, it's a little bit of a waste because that's really not what the movie is about. It's just what the movie became known for mostly. But how do we describe Minority Report? It is a complex story. So it stars Tom Cruise as John Anderton, who is the chief of pre-crime, which is a division in the police in the future, which essentially tackles crimes before they happen. They do so with the help of the precogs. I apologize for the language. Precogs, who are a trio of
psychics
with precognitive abilities, who essentially predict the murders, tell you, you know, who the victim is going to be, who the murderer is going to be, and then this special squad goes out and tackles them before they happen. And of course, through a series of strange events involving a Colin Farrell Danny Whitwer, who comes to the division to kind of investigate and see what's going on, John Anderton finds himself accused and thus begins the true second act of the film.
So it's very difficult to explain to someone what the story of Minority Report is, but what really struck me when I rewatched it, and very important to say it's directed by Steven Spielberg, right? Because what that does to a story as complex as this is that it makes it so accessible. When you talk about the story, it sounds so complex. But when you watch it unfold on screen, I suddenly realize that, you know, in the midst of all of these heavy, complicated, twisty sci-fi stories that we've gotten used to in today's world, this film is actually incredibly easy to understand, not in a bad way. It's accessible, but really deep. So, and I think that's something that someone like Steven Spielberg exclusively can bring to the genre. We don't give him enough credit for how accessible he makes a genre like sci-fi. Whether it's this, whether it was AI, bringing these concepts like precogs and pre-crime to a level that everyone can enjoy and to kind of create that world that everyone can enjoy, I think is a gift that very few filmmakers can actually do.
And it's also very frightening, right? I mean, the one major theme, like, do you punish someone for something they haven't done yet because you think they're going to do it? Like, if a clairvoyant says you're going to do something, does that mean you're going to do something, or does it mean you might do something? All those big questions, right? Did you guys like the blue tone of the film? Because I realized that the bluish tint that the whole film has was the reason why I haven't seen it in about 15 years. Because even though I loved the movie when I first saw it, it makes rewatching it very difficult because it's very stuffy and very cold at the same time. It's not something that I want to revisit soon, even though there's nothing wrong with the movie as is.
I did struggle a little bit with the tone, the visual tone of it, and also actually with the weightlessness of the CG. It's beautiful CG, don't get me wrong, especially for something that is now essentially 19 years old. It looks great, but we've come a long way. So because of that, I think sometimes rewatching it is difficult. But mostly, and this is something that has been a theme for me ever since I refused to rewatch Alien for like the longest time, watched it again recently and felt foolish. Minority Report's gross, huh? Like, it's actually really gross.
It really is. And that fits with actually, weirdly, what you were talking about the blueness. And that's something I remember. So this whole film, its envisioning of the future is hugely cold, mechanical, and invasive. Everything about this film, they infiltrate your mind, they infiltrate your body, they infiltrate your house. There's no privacy. And that blue tone, I think, the reason it didn't bother me is because it adds to creating that weird atmosphere of discomfort that you feel the whole way through this film. The only times when you don't feel that is actually when there are these scenes where he leaves and he actually visits a home that he used to live in, which isn't in this urban environment. Or he visits this country area where he meets someone important to the plot. It's a tough film to watch. And even today, the body horror of a lot of these scenes is quite intense.
Yeah. Speaking about the tech, though, it's funny how the tech in the movie is so far behind the tech that we have now. Even though the movie takes place in 2054, it's already dated. Especially there's one scene where they are riding the train and then some guy's like flipping the newspaper, and you have these newspapers that sort of change in real time.
So it looks like Harry Potter.
It looks like, yeah.
I was avoiding saying that because I didn't want to, infuse Harry Potter.
The other thing is how they clearly don't have anything like the cloud or the internet, right?
They're
like transferring things with transparent disks.
Mm-hmm. John Anderton has access to his whole system like years after he gets arrested, okay? He gets arrested, he gets accused, and all the way through, it's like every time he needs access, it's like he still has it. And I'm thinking, guys, just click the X next to his name. But I recognize that maybe 19 years ago, it didn't seem that simple. I think it's a mixed bag with the tech because some of it does look really cool. I like the fact that even though it's 2054, and this is something that Steven Spielberg talked about, that there was a very, very concerted attempt to not make it look like, quote unquote, the future, you know, to not have flying cars necessarily, to not do that sort of thing. Instead, it's still quite recognizably our world, and the griminess kind of contributes to that. It's not like some perfect, sleek version of the future where trash robots will come and clean your house. In fact, if you look at most of the homes and the offices in the movie, they look kind of dirty in the same way that they would as long as a human was living there. And so I appreciate that part of it. It's a very lived-in version of the future.
And I also like that it didn't bother me that the tech doesn't line up with what we have. I think because it still looks cool. The hand-wavy thing, I think there's a reason why it's stayed on in pop culture because of just how cool it looks to watch him do that whole, here's how we figure things out. And some of those motions we're now familiar with, right? Like the touch screening and the widening and the zooming in. Unlike some other older sci-fi, which starts feeling janky beyond a certain point in time.
The tech looks cool, but it doesn't look practical at all. It's not tech that you want. And Lynn, you mentioned that, Steven Spielberg didn't want the flying cars. I love how He didn't want flying cars, but he wanted sliding cars because
those are outside of buildings.
On the outside of buildings. So you have like these roller coaster cars that are on like weirdly built roads. I'm like, none of this seems practical or space efficient or.
But it allows Tom Cruise to jump around those cars.
Exactly.
That in itself is enough reason.
So it's built for him. The city is built for Tom Cruise.
You know how I felt watching this movie and watching the famous scene where, you know, Tom Cruise puts on the gloves and like pulls up the images and stuff. And I was just thinking, aw, Tom Cruise learned to walk so that Robert Downey Jr. could fly, because you know, if you think about the science stuff in Avengers and all the science bros, right, and how they work the air essentially, it's so sophisticated now, and I just wonder what it would have been like for an actor almost 20 years ago to do it not knowing how it would look. Most actors now understand, I think, that you can play it quite small. You can really kind of twiddle and do very small things with your hands and have it look very sophisticated. But everybody, from Tom Cruise to Colin Farrell, whenever they stand in front of the visualization screen, they're like, here I am, I'm conducting an opera. And I was like, oh, bless you guys.
You know what's even weirder? That Tom Cruise was going to be Iron Man at one point. Like, he was supposed to play Tony Stark.
God.
So that just lines up in such a strange way.
But you know, I remember watching Minority Report in the cinema, and I remember getting goosebumps at that scene. You know, it's one of those things where suddenly you see something on screen that you've never seen before, and how cool it looked. And there's something there, I think, for this whole idea of building stepping stones towards something that then becomes fully realized.
In the real world, that's like clicking a mouse and opening a folder, which is not as cool. So when he was doing that, I'm like, look, in the future, I don't want to exercise in front of my like PC. I don't want to do work, you know. It's like, and he does a lot of work, like the hand movements and stuff. I'm pretty sure that everyone else had to follow Tom Cruise, and because he doesn't do small things, right? So he probably did that first.
That's what I was thinking.
And he's like, man, now we have to do the opera thing just because he did it.
And no one looks as good. So I'm sorry.
No.
It's just a Tom Cruise. Anderton's the only one who does it.
It's the opera hands and the intense eyes all happening at once. And that's Minority Report. So we're talking today about 2002's Minority Report, throwing off our future week, starting with something that really looked at what the future might be like in 2054 and some of the ethical struggles that come with crime, really. And we'd love to know whether you've watched Minority Report, whether you're planning to rewatch it, what you remember. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvind. Today, we are throwing it back to a future-looking movie. And that's pretty much the theme that we're going with this week, which is our future movie week. We're talking about Minority Report. So we've spent a bit of time mostly talking about the look and story and tech of the movie, which is a very big deal. But I also wanted to look at the performances because while a big chunk of this movie is sci-fi, a lot of it is also a noir detective kind of thing. You know, it's quite an old-fashioned detective story in some senses. And I think that a lot of that rests on the performances.
Oh, absolutely. And despite off-screen antics, I'm a huge flag bearer for Tom Cruise as an actor and as a movie star. And I think Minority Report is a great example of how he can really do so much when you give him the right role. Because you're right, you know, Tom Cruise as action star, you have it. He's here leaping from buildings and cars. But Tom Cruise as actor, dramatic actor, he's here as well. He has the he has a tragic past. He's struggling with his own addiction, with grief and so on. And besides Tom Cruise, you have people like Colin Farrell, you have Max von Sydow, who all do really good jobs. And they play what could be tropey characters, but they end up being a lot more. I actually really like Colin Farrell in particular in this film, just because he's such an interesting foil to Tom Cruise.
I don't know when Tom Cruise became that action movie guy, though, or just that action movie guy, maybe because of like Mission Impossible and like late in his career, what he's been doing, right? But he's a really, really good actor. Like, he can do drama really well. And I honestly think like these movies that he's in are not just action sci-fi movies or just put in that bracket or that bin because of Tom Cruise. Because if it had anyone else who can't pull off the sort of, who can't emote as much as he can, then they become just that other cheap sci-fi thing that someone did, right? Tom Cruise really, really takes his movies up a notch, whether that's by his own design or his own sort of like, I have to do more, I don't know. But he's a good actor.
Mm, he is. And I think the character is, most of the characters are quite complex. And this is where the noir stuff kicks in, right? We threw back recently to Blade Runner. And this movie in some ways also explores similar ethical territory, although that one was more about the separation of humanity, fundamentally what makes you human. Right. This is really more about what makes your actions or your decisions your own versus some sort of, you know, predetermined path that you're just walking on. And I think that to kind of really delve into that and to add some complexity, you need good characters, you need good actors playing those characters. And Max von Sydow is just crazy. You know, I forgot that he was ever in this. And so watching it and realizing that he was there, I was like, oh, that's, you know, it's, he's so good and kind of deep. I also really loved Samantha Morton, who plays the precog, who adds a layer of, is this an infallible system, right? Agatha, she's the most powerful of the precogs, and she essentially opens the door for you to wonder whether this system that they're using, is really that great at predicting crime.
She could have so easily been a flat character, right? But I think Samantha Morton does such a good job with it. I love the scenes she has with Tom Cruise, because they're these great scenes. And one of the things I love about the film, and why I like that you called it a noir, I would also call it cyberpunk, because the city is a huge part of what makes up the story. And some of my favorite scenes is are when she and Tom Cruise are sort of wandering around the cityscape, and you get this idea of how this area functions and how the tech in this world functions. And the both of them feel so human. I mean, their interactions are so human amidst this that you really feel like you live there. And I think that's really important for stories like these, because otherwise it's very easy for them to start feeling like fake backgrounds against which actors are acting.
Mm. I'm embarrassed to say that I remember Christopher Plummer being in this, but it wasn't Christopher Plummer. It was Max von Sydow. And then I watched it now and I'm like, wait, I it's a completely different version of the film.
I thought it was Terrence Stamp. So I think we might all just be...
all prestige older actors that were just plunking into the role.
It's Ian McKellen. Why not?
It was supposed to be. So that's the thing. I was going to say that there was like an entire alternate reality where I think Ian McKellen was considered for the role of Lamar Burgess, which is Max von Sydow's role, which is Tom Cruise's boss, John Anderton's boss. Mm-hmm. Meryl Streep was supposed to be Iris Hinneman. Jenna Fisher, I think, was supposed to be Lara. So there was a lot of there were a lot of actors that were supposed to play the role. And that's partly because it was a complicated and long-winded production as well.
I can't imagine that movie, because if we say this a fair amount with our throwbacks, and I think there's a good reason why a lot of these films end up being throwbacks. But for me, Minority Report is so perfect as itself. I really cannot imagine anyone else playing any of those roles.
Mm, even if, like, because of the people who are in it, you can kind of predict, no pun intended, like what's going to happen. And you see things coming from like a mile away, but even then it's just fun being in this like futurescape or this futuristic world because of the other side stories that they have and how interesting it is. As far as like the mystery goes, I think if you've seen any amount of sci-fi over the last 10 years, you will be able to tell exactly where this is going and sort of predict the outcome.
Actors aside, I don't think anyone else could have made this version of the film other than Steven Spielberg. So this is 2 weeks in a row, actually, that we're throwing back to a Steven Spielberg film. And what's fascinating about that is that I think if you didn't know, you wouldn't know. There is no sort of thumbprint, aside from the fact that these are near perfect films in their own right. But other than that, you wouldn't be like, that is clearly the same guy. And I think that his level of perfectionism, his dedication to storytelling, his sort of eye for detail and eye for innovation is part of what makes Minority Report what it is. Because we have seen Steven Spielberg himself sort of push through different technological innovations through the years. We've thrown back to so many of them, in fact, in our episodes. And so, yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the director.
I think much like Tom Cruise, Steven Spielberg often gets overlooked for what he can bring to the table in terms of how he makes film. Once you know, you see the Spielbergness, but if you didn't no, you just look at it as a really great film, I actually think that's a compliment.
And I also think that this is the period where Steven Spielberg stopped being Steven Spielberg, right? Because he was like experimenting with different kinds of films. He did AI also at the same time, which flopped. It was like a massive flop. But I think because of stuff like Minority Report, it's worth him moving out of his comfort zone and then doing different things, because we kind of lost the Steven Spielberg at this point. And he never really bounced back. But I guess if we get things like this along the way, it's kind of okay that we don't have old Steven Spielberg anymore.
I wanted to, at the end of the show, talk about the ending of the film. So without any spoilers, how did you both feel about the ending? Because I don't love the ending. I know that we've talked about how it's a great film in its own right, and I still think all that is true. But I think that considering the pacing of the rest of the movie and the general tone, the ending takes a strange turn, and it does so in its in a timing that feels very particular to itself and not to the rest of the film as well.
As somebody who's watched the film, I actually found myself being surprised at a particular point and sort of faked out in a way, which I was like, oh, this can still happen. I'd forgotten this happens. But you're right. The last part and how it arrives at the ending almost feels like they forgot how much runtime they have left and therefore had to squeeze in almost a third's worth of plot into like the last 10 minutes. And I didn't love it.
I was okay with it. And I don't know if that's because of the runtime, because the movie is quite long. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes or something like that. I think by that point, I was ready for the movie to finish or to end. So however way they wanted to wrap it up, I was like, okay, you know, I'm good with this.
So we've been talking today about 2002's Minority Report, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Tom Cruise. And yeah, we just want to know, I mean, did you enjoy Minority Report? Do you remember watching it? Do you plan to watch it soon? We're going to be spending much of this week talking about movies and TV shows that are set in the future. And this is one great version of it, I think. Not great so far as the ethics go, but great in terms of storytelling and look. Let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.